The transformational path of the 62nd gene key moves from intellect to impeccability, and it's the path of precision. I hope you enjoy this one. I'm going to enjoy it. Quite a few people have been rather shocked to find that the shadows, one of the shadows in the gene keys, is the shadow of intellect. And it reminds us, I think, that the shadows aren't in and of themselves bad. They're just starting places for transformation. And the reason that intellect is a shadow is, well, quite simply because it's rooted in dualism. And duality is such a paradox, not to itself, but to truth. To itself, dualism is all there is. So intellect only sees life in terms of opposites, black and white, right and wrong. And our world is fabricated out of that. We don't really realize it because we're so immersed in it. We grew up with it. It's everywhere. It's the structure of our societies. It's embedded in our language patterns. It's in our emotional bodies. It's the very way that our perception operates. But it isn't all there is. There are other modes of perception. And the world of intellect is a construct. It's what the ancients called the Maya. It's interesting to think about the ancients here because it appears that the construct of the Maya, the illusion, has not always been as rigid as it is today. There's this persistent intuition in humanity that somewhere, somehow, a long, long time ago, we saw things differently. There was some kind of a golden age before our modern thinkers came along. And we've inherited fragments of this distant epoch through the ancient texts, through the Vedas, through the emerald tablets of the Hermetic corpus, through the Kabbalists, the Druids, the Orphic tradition, and of course the shamanic elders, who still embody the old wisdom even today. And when we try to look out through the eyes of those ancients, it doesn't quite work anymore. Because how can you look back through the eyes of an earlier evolution? You can try, but it just doesn't quite work because the brain has moved on. And the 62nd gene key is special. It's special because it has the capacity to see beyond the Maya, the illusion, by going through the Maya. So this is the path of Jnana Yoga, or what the ancients called Gnosis. To use the mind to go beyond the mind. But first of all, we need to understand the backdrop. Where we've come from, where we are now, and where we're going. So this contemplation may be a little bit more detailed and longer than some of the others. I can feel it wanting to have more detail, needing a deeper exploration. So that's what I'm going to give it. Intellect is based upon a single foundation. It's based on number. A number is the basis of the cosmos. And I'm not talking about number in the way we see it today, but the way the ancients understood number. Number is the connective tissue that allows the mind to see the true nature of everything. Number today is associated with fact. We'll get to that in a moment. But I want to help you understand what number meant to the ancient world, the world before the intellect took over. Number is the means to see correspondences. It's the key to seeing the connectivity of the holographic universe. So when we hear the ancient statement, as above, so below, that is the core foundation of the ancient worldview, and the means to see it was number. And this is why the ancients used, for example, astrology. It's why they anthropomorphized their world, because everything corresponds to everything else. So all the old systems are based on codes, the 22 of the Kabbalah, the 12 of astrology, the 64 of the I Ching. Everyone used number in order to create the correspondences. So number had quality rather than quantity. Number was spiritual, and it became the connecting rod that allowed us to enter into courtship with the divine. Number was our yoga. It was nothing like it is now. It was magical, and the way in which we identified with number shaped the way our brains worked. We lived in a more merged existence because everything meant something. It's why in all the old stories number is so important, so prevalent. But the modern mind, it just thinks it's obscure. You know, I was recently in the Hebridean Islands with my wife, and we visited the Standing Stones of Callanish, an amazing place. But such places baffle the modern scientific mind, because when you read the modern descriptions of these places, it's a non-magical mind projecting onto a magical mind. Can you imagine that? The brain was different then. It was at an earlier stage of evolution. It was more merged. So there's no way you can understand the minds that built those ancient temples, not with the intellect. You see, now number is all about measurement. It's become time. You know, after the birth of Christ, more or less, we began using number to create time, and therefore history. But in the ancient world, time wasn't numbered. It's hard for us to imagine that now. The people that erected those stones did it for a reason, because stone is a witness to the passing of time, so that they would have a witness to their passing generations and a way of remembering and ensuring that they were remembered, at least energetically, by future generations. So now we no longer use number like that. We no longer live in that timeless dimension. Our brains have learned a new way of using number. You know, I blame Socrates. Not really. I love Socrates. He was a wonderful thinker. But he was one of the earliest examples of the direction that the brain then took. It evolved into a dualistic mechanism. Everything became about the dialectic. Everything became about identification, about opposites, about reason, and about conflict. So we went through a process of unmerging. We differentiated, and a new logic was born. Intellect was born. Fact was born. Science was born. And this is the basis of the 60-second shadow. You see, when you take the magic away from number, it becomes rigid as fact. And to build a world out of facts is to build a hall of mirrors, a false reality. And this is the modern world. And facts are the dilemma of this gene key, of this shadow. Because what is a fact? We know that a scientist can prove virtually anything with enough data, regardless of whether it's true or not. So there are no facts. There is only interpretation. That's what Nietzsche said. And then, of course, today's facts are the future's fables. That's a great sentence. You can put quotes around that and send it out to Twitter or something. Today's facts are the future's fables. And it's true, because facts give us the illusion of order, of balance, of harmony. But if you build your life around them, you're building your home on shaky ground. So you have to be very careful with this shadow. Your worldview is very likely built upon sand. It's why you see one of the related shadow gene keys here is arrogance. That's through the codon ring, which links the 60-second gene key to the 31st gene key. It's called the Ring of No Return. I love that name. More about that later. But there is an arrogance in believing in facts. We think we've solved something. We've used number to empirically prove something. But that something can't be proven as truth. Fact and truth, they're not the same. They're not even of the same dimension. So facts should be distrusted. They should be. That's what I'm saying. Look at the facts that you assume are real. Look at the propaganda that you've swallowed. That's what working with this shadow is all about. It's about uprooting our opinions. You know, in human design, the 17th gene key, as shadow of opinion, is at the other end of the channel of this 62nd gene key. So facts may drive us towards truth, but they cannot be regarded as truth, or even as truisms. And some of the most important facts that hold up our worldview today may turn out to be absolutely false one day in the future. They're bound to. Arrogance is intellectual certainty, whereas humility is something different. It only comes through cellular certainty, and the only cellular certainty is love. Now, I'm explaining all of this in the hope that some small aspect of it will break through in your mind to demonstrate how utterly intellect has us in its thrall. We've been completely hoodwinked, and it's become so influential. It's become so useful. I mean, the intellect has advanced us so far. It's given us all our technology, all our efficiency. It's helped an awful lot of people move from poverty to prosperity. It has helped hugely. It continues to. I am not an anti-scientist at all. But it has only helped in one dimension. the external. It has not helped us internally. It has actually made everything worse on the inside. Look at all the shadows of the 64 gene keys and you will see what intellect is made up of. Confusion, agitation, doubt, expectation, chaos, psychosis. Here's the programming partner, the 61st shadow of psychosis. That's what we've become. We are split. We are no longer one. We've become two. So how does this relate to you? You might say. It all sounds perhaps rather philosophical. I know it does. But that's the modern mind. It has us utterly trapped. It has us cornered. We have no idea how to overcome our inner difficulties, and we can't get back to how we were. The ancient world and its systems can't help us anymore, not the way they used to, because the brain itself has changed. So how do we break the psychosis? How do we get out of the Maya? The 60-second gift. Precision. So now we're in duality. We can't go back to one. We can't turn back the clocks to timelessness. We can't return to that archaic golden age. This is the ring of no return. There is no going back. We can only go forwards. And forwards from two leads to three. So in the first eon, the archaic eon, we were submerged in oneness. In the second, we fell and divided and gave birth to the historical eon, the eon of measurement, the eon of two. So how to return to unity? Well, you get back to one by moving forwards into three, into Trinity. So if you have this 60-second gene key or you're exploring it through contemplation, look at your life. You may well have an obsession with details. And you may well be the victim of life's endless details and trivia and plans. Look at how your days are numbered. And there's no pun intended here. Your life follows the dictates of numbers and facts, times and dates, lists and accounts, progressions and sequences. Your bank account, the amount of time you spend on this and on that, your cell phone, your computer, all based on numbers. The opinions you formed as a child, the ideology you've imbibed through your language patterns and the syntax, your culture, your political stance, even your health is measured. Everything is held together within this structure that we've created. It's extremely hard to step out of the mire. How do we do it? That's the conundrum of the gift. That's the challenge of the gift. Well, the first thing you have to do is see the depth of the illusion that surrounds you. The next thing to do is to go on seeing it. In everything, everywhere. And this is the value of contemplation. Contemplation begins with the mind. You must see the numbers behind everything, the ordering principles, the laws, and then as you see them, you will feel an acceptance slowly rising in you. There is an order in the cosmos. There is perfection. But it's also disturbing because we live in a deeply transitionary period between the eons, a gap between the epochs. We live in the time of the great change. So to see the Maya is to step through the mire and out the other side. So you will become aware of something when you go on contemplating this gene key. You'll see two harmonies, a false one and a real one. And the false one is the world we've created over the top of the real one. See, the real one is nature. The rhythms of the seasons, the passage of the stars, the ebb and the eddy of the waters and the tides. The great rhythms. And then there's our false harmony, held together with sellotape. A couple of intense sunspots or a meteorite and it's all gone. No more supermarkets, no more internet, no more Amazon deliveries to your door. And I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I am saying that our modern society, its days are numbered. A fundamental change is coming to humanity and it's coming from inside us. It may have its reflection on the outside, but it will change the way our brains operate. Our DNA is mutating. We're moving from the dualistic to the trinary. And in three, you arrive back at one, but it's not the same one. It's one enriched by the journey through two. The gift of precision. It's not nearly as boring as it sounds. It's about the precision of awareness. It's the ability to see which patterns are in resonance with truth and which patterns are false, which are paper tigers. So part of this gift's purpose is to pinpoint that which is false. But the other part is to organize information and structures and people so that they're in right relationship to the higher harmony. And this gift always involves love. Love is the only way you can dismantle the Maya, the construct of the intellect. Isn't that an amazing truth? And I don't mean yearning love or desire love or needing love. I mean love. I mean unconditional love. Love rooted in service of the whole. It's what the religious people have called the love of God. I always wondered what that meant. Love rooted in the service of the whole. You see, in the old world, every number related to a plant, a stone, a place. It showed you where you were in the space-time continuum. And this brings us to the art and science of alchemy, which is the art of using the qualities in the numbers in certain combinations to bring about transformation. But it's you that's transformed. No, so number and language is the route forwards to paradise. Hermes, you know, he was the god of numbers. And precision is about aligning your life correctly with the sacred principles. It's about awakening love. So we began with archaic number, which was only about quality, remember? And then we moved into historical number, which is what we have now, which is only about quantity. And now we come to a new age in which we arrive at unified number, which combines quality and quantity and transcends them both. And unity brings an end to history. We'll have a look at that one in the city. How can I make this simple? Embrace the shadow, release the gift, embody the city. That's what I'm describing in the context of the whole. The 60-second gene key sees the entire holographic cosmos. Everything is connected to everything else in perfect harmony. Every experience is perfect. The timing of your awakening is perfect. Precision is everywhere. The more you start seeing it, the more you imbibe it, the more you relax, and then you come into harmony. But this coming into harmony, I tell you, it's going to put you through a few initiations. An initiation often feels far from harmonious. But stepping out of the Maya, it's like leaving the Earth's orbit. You have to build up a certain escape velocity to punch through the veil. So I want you to know that the gene keys are not facts. They're not rooted in fact. They're wormholes that open into love. They are stitches in the holographic fabric of time and space, and your awareness can travel along them. This is a magical system because we live in a magical universe. You can read the book and then you can forget what you've read. You won't be tested. This isn't that kind of a world anymore. The gene keys will teach you how to use the number to transcend the number. They teach you how to use a language in order to transcend language, and they teach us from the inside out. All we have to do is keep contemplating. It's about thoughts. Energy follows thought. That's an ancient axiom. So when you change your thoughts, you change your attractor field and you change your frequency. And the gene keys represent the language of light. They elevate your mind up onto this causal plane, the dimension beyond the mental plane. And at the causal level, numbers exist as pure principles, divine archetypes. And as these archetypes come down into your mind, they open your mind and they open your heart. And it's a precision technology, this new language. And we have to learn it as we would learn any new language. You see, the old worldview is deeply flawed. It's made up of half-truths and opposites and opinions. And there is no real order. There is only a false order that keeps your heart and your mind closed. You know, a while ago I coined a new term for this kind of thinking through the 60-second gift. I called it sin thinking. The ability to think across multiple dimensions simultaneously. to think with your heart. You know, the ability to allow a higher archetype, for example, a gene key, to descend into your body and illuminate you from within. It takes contemplation and surrender and precision. So these new ways of seeing the world, this new language, it gives you a ladder for your thoughts to become more and more rarefied until they begin to merge with the field of light itself. And then your thoughts become ecstatic and your words carry fire inside them. So the gift of precision, in a long-winded kind of way, is a new kind of precision. It's not a masculine precision. That's usually how we understand the word, precision. This is the precision of the feminine. You know how a woman has her own timing? The men hearing this will know exactly what I mean. The feminine keeps you waiting sometimes, because her body is more deeply attuned to the celestial rhythms than the male, the moon, for example. Please don't take this literally, ladies. I'm really talking about poles. There's a male timing and there's a female timing. That's all I'm saying. And the female version of precision is not about exactness. It's about harmony. Information is more swiftly and more efficiently organized through intuition than through any other means. So this digital revolution, it certainly looks impressive in its ability to create order, but it cannot track harmony because harmony sometimes moves through disorder. So the gift of precision knows how to move with equanimity through periods of order and disorder. This is your gift, to navigate these big changes with absolute precision, mentally, emotionally, and physically. How to move through transformation with precision and grace. And to inspire others to do the same, that's your gift if you have the 60-second gene key. The 60-second city, impeccability. And finally, we come to the city, and everything at the city level becomes simple once again. This is the logic of unity, the language of light embodied as impeccability. It's always been intriguing to me that the higher you go up the ladder of frequencies, the fewer words become available to you. And the tendency is to use those words in paradoxical or poetic combinations, because the words are continually dissolving back into the silence of the unity. You might have grasped that this gene key has a lot to do with words and numbers. It's about truth. It's actually, come to think of it, only one gene key away from truth, if you know what I mean. The 63rd gene key is truth. That's the city. This is when fact is utterly superseded by truth. So at the shadow frequency, fact has all the influence, but at the siddhic frequency, only truth has influence. And when truth is expressed through your physicality, it becomes impeccability. So what is this impeccability? What is this truth? Well, it's pure, authentic presence. A single emotion, fully embodied, fully owned. It needn't even be expressed externally. That's what has influence. Utter authenticity. Utter humanity. Here's a thought for you. There have been so many paintings, writings, pieces of great art and music that have been lost, that never saw the light of day. You know, great masterpieces, never seen by anyone but their author. Perhaps they were destroyed or lost or burned. Think about that. Music as beautiful as a Mozart Requiem. Art as fine as a Rembrandt. Literature as perfect as a Shakespeare or a Dostoevsky. Gone, never seen. Well, the art itself has no influence, but the act of creating the art as it occurred, that is what has influence. The art as it came through the artist into the present moment. That is the only influential thing at the city level. It's never the result, it's always the moment. In eternity, no moment of truth is ever lost. It remains always. It alone survives. So a moment of pure awareness is more precious than anything you could ever create. Those moments are what remain when we die, etched forever in the fabric of our causal body. The best of us, the purity of our hearts, our impeccable moments. And an impeccable moment doesn't have to be perfect. If you're thinking of impeccability in that way, let it go. This is a city. It's a paradox. Be gone, intellectual thinking. You can't enter here. Facts have no meaning here. Words have no meaning here. Only the presence behind the words has meaning. This is embodied truth. The logic of unity brings an end to history. We're entering into a new epoch. A new kind of human stands at the door. It's a timeless dimension, but one that's also mentally, emotionally, and physically integrated. It's the three in one, the great mystery of the Trinity. I call it the Trivian race. This is what's coming, the human that's coming. In the times ahead, we will let go of history. We will stop recording it, because we'll stop noticing it. It may remain in the records for our interest and our inspiration, but we won't keep time anymore. Number, in its purest form, brings utter synthesis to our lives. We're no longer the movers, but the moved. We're no longer the choosers, but the chosen. We're no longer divided, but whole. In Japan, there's a certain philosophy that pervades the arts and crafts movement. In pottery, it's called kintsugi, which means literally golden repair. And it's the art of fixing broken pottery with powdered gold or silver. And once it's been repaired in this way, the broken pot or whatever actually becomes far more precious than a pristine new one. And these pots are so beautiful. The thinking behind this, then, is that every object has a history, and that history is a part of its beauty and its depth. So why discard something if it can be repaired and made even more beautiful? And we so often try and disguise our wounds. We so often throw away our broken objects. And yet there's a deeper beauty to our wounding than anything, because it's part of our authenticity, our mistakes. And it can be embraced entirely within us and remain a part of our beauty. And when we suck in the golden light from the higher planes and we let it remold us, we become even more exquisite. We become imperfectly perfect. We become impeccable. So I'd like to close this extraordinary contemplation of this gene key by leaving you with one final right brain image. One of the approaches into the gene keys is called the dream arc, which equates every gene key with its corresponding totem animal or bird or underworld creature. So it's a shamanic way into the gene keys. And the bird of the 62nd city is the woodpecker. And the woodpecker, who likes to pun, by the way, with the word impeccability, he or she signifies the eternal drumbeat of truth. And he sees value everywhere, particularly in old dead trees, where he draws his sustenance and he makes his home there. So think about the dead wood in your inner life, the parts of yourself you've been trying to escape, any aspects of your past that you're running from that you might be ashamed of. And open your heart to your full self. There is great beauty in your mistakes. And breathe new life into your inner being and gently fill the cracks with the golden light of compassion and self-forgiveness. You are beautiful. Your life is impeccable. Be yourself absolutely and utterly. And think of the little woodpecker and his bright, proud red throat. And open your heart and serve life and serve others. And remember, the only real influence in the universe is your presence as yourself, inside yourself, in every waking golden moment.